I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. The Romney campaign is seizing on a comment President Obama made on Univision yesterday when asked what his biggest failure was.
I've learned some lessons over the last 4 years. And the most important lesson I've learned is that you can't change Washington from the inside. You can only change it from the outside.
Now, the Obama campaign clarified that the president meant he wanted to bring voices from outside Washington into the political debate. But Mitt Romney pounced.
I can change Washington. I will change Washington. We'll get the job done from the inside. Republicans and Democrats will come together. He can't do it. His slogan was, yes, we can. His slogan now is, no, I can't.
Although in his 2008 campaign, Mitt Romney said, I don't think you change Washington from the inside. I think you change it from the outside. Washington, the seat of government, is always at the heart of a campaign, but this week it's been front and center. A Reuters poll shows that 59% responding felt Romney's comments that 47% of Americans live off the government unfairly dismissed Americans as victims. But 41% of respondents felt Romney was making an important point, that too many people in the U.S. are takers, not enough are makers. Well, at the end of a week that saw a debate over who's a taker, who's a maker, we wanted to bring in Michael Grunwald. Coincidentally, in last week's Time magazine, before Mitt Romney's comments, Mike wrote a cover story reminding us just how much all Americans take from their government. Michael Grunwald is senior national correspondent for Time, also author of a much-discussed new book about President Obama's stimulus bill, The New New Deal, and he joins us from WLRN in Miami. Mike, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
And now when you had written that Time cover story and then Mitt Romney came out with the comment about the 47% of Americans who were victims, you responded by saying, you know, I try not to get worked up about politics, but I am about the Romney comments. Why?
Well, I don't like the idea that we're sort of a nation divided between makers and takers, because as I showed in the article, first of all, we are, if you work, you're a maker. Right. You may not pay what's imprecisely called income taxes, but you pay taxes on your income through the payroll tax. You pay gas taxes and local taxes, and sales taxes, all kinds of taxes. So you help build that. But at the same time, we're all takers as well. I wake up every morning in subsidized housing.
Why is it subsidized housing?
Well, not because I'm a poor person getting federal subsidies directly, but because I own my home, so I have a mortgage interest deduction. And similar, my savings is subsidized through my 401k. My nanny is subsidized through child care tax credits. My health care is subsidized because there's a tax exclusion for employer-provided benefits. And then I have subsidized roads. I have my police protection, my national defense. Most of what our government spends on is Medicare and Medicaid and national defense and things that people like quite a lot. But there's a sense that somehow government is for other people when, in fact, we all benefit from it.
Well, as you say, most people are proud of the making but blind to their taking. And you also point out, and this, again, was before Mitt Romney's comments, that this is a longtime conservative line, that half of the country is mooching off the other half. There's an essay from Nicholas Eberstadt of the American Enterprise Institute called A Nation of Takers, America's Entitlement Epidemic. It claims the country has become an entitlement machine. And nobody would deny that entitlements have gone up. There's just no question that more being paid out. But take us deeper into how we all are taking. I mean, you talk about water, you know, the water you use to brush your teeth or put in a teapot or take a shower, or electricity for your toaster at breakfast. That when you're having that toast, it's government subsidized.
Sure. Well, I pay a monthly water bill of about $100 a month, but that doesn't nearly cover the cost of what it takes government to deliver clean water to my house, make sure that it's clean, and then to get rid of the wastewater from my house. And in fact, my first book was about the Everglades, and there's a $15 billion federal project to restore the Everglades. The Everglades sits right on top of the aquifers that provide the drinking water to my home. Of course, nobody thinks of that as part of the cost of delivering water, but it is. I pay an electricity bill as well, but that doesn't include all of, there's a nuclear power plant not that far from where I live in South Beach, and it has all kinds of government subsidies, really cradle to grave, not only for the risk insurance without which it could never get built, but state subsidies, federal subsidies. There's a huge element of government in all of our lives in a way that conservatives have often correctly identified that there's kind of too much government, that government does a lot of things that it isn't particularly good at and does too many things. But at the same time, they have something to learn from the left as well, and that we really are reliant on government in ways that are not just mooching, but living.
For instance, you say when you pull on a cotton T-shirt, or as you said, when you eat cereal, these are subsidized industries, the cotton and grain farmers who and that government subsidy maybe makes those T-shirts or your kids' breakfast cereals cheaper.
Well, maybe a few cents. That's actually a perfect example of something where I did do some reporting for this story in Washington, and I spoke to the Libertarian Cato Institute and the Liberal Center for Budget on Policy Priorities, and I asked the experts at both of those think tanks, well, if you were going to start shrinking the size of this government that subsidizes all of us every day, where would you start? And they both said farm subsidies, because essentially it's a way of shoveling billions of dollars to farmers every year, and not poor farmers and not small farmers, in ways that provide maybe a few cents of benefits for us. And these are the kind of things that I think there ought to be a great debate about big government in this country. It's just that right now we're having a debate about a big government that doesn't exist.
Well, just to round out the thought on the farm lobby, you say it's so strong that the U.S. had to cut a deal with Brazil because Brazil was so angry about how much U.S. farmers were subsidized that the U.S. has to now also pay Brazilian farmers?
Exactly. The World Trade Organization essentially found out that they ruled that we were illegally subsidizing our own cotton farmers. So instead of just eliminating those cotton farmers, our government said, well, okay, so we'll pay money, a couple hundred million dollars a year to Brazil's cotton farmers as well, and that way it'll be fair. But it's a perfect example of the way when special interests end up dominating the policy. Look, take the carried interest deduction that helps certain guys on Wall Street. We don't know whether the Republican candidate for president benefits from it, but it allows hedge fund guys and some other financial sector bankers who are making a lot of money to essentially shelter some of that income from regular taxation. Who cares about the carried interest deduction? Some guys in New York who make a lot of money from it, they pay attention to it and make sure that it stays. And that's the way that we've built up this system, particularly on the tax expenditure side, because we know the government spends $3.5 trillion a year in sort of regular spending, but there's another $1.3 trillion in tax expenditures, which is money that never reaches the Treasury and is really mostly targeted towards people who already have money to encourage them to do things like save or consume health care or hire a nanny or other things that they probably would do anyway, the mortgage deduction being the best example, where the bigger your house, the more expensive your house, and the higher your income, the more you benefit from the deduction.
That's Michael Grunwald. He's senior national correspondent for Time magazine. If you've just joined us, his cover story last week, before Mitt Romney's comments about half of the country, or almost half of the country, living off the government and being victims, Michael took a look at how, as he says, all Americans are in some way benefiting from the government. He goes on to talk about, the Pentagon research that led to the development of the Internet, but then also maybe a $213 million arena for the basketball team that he roots for. But, Michael, to also get inside the head.
It seems like a better investment these days after after we won the championship.
Well, but still, somebody would say, why? Why is the government there? It's one thing to have the government subsidize water so we can all have it at a relatively cheap cost. But where do you see the government subsidizing things that has no business to?
Right. I think it's a real question behind this article. And I tried to point out that, first of all, the vast majority of government expenditures go towards pretty uncontroversial stuff, towards the Pentagon, towards health care for the elderly and the poor and the disabled, and towards Social Security. The non-defense discretionary, which is Washingtonese for everything else, only comes out to about 12%. And that's usually what we're fighting about. That said, there's really – across the ideological spectrum, there's a lot of agreement on the kind of things that you could trim without too much pain to anyone. Farm subsidies being the best example, but also there are $700 billion in annual subsidies for sort of anti-environmental government spending that actually makes the environment worse through sprawl roads or silly water projects that drain wetlands. And then on the tax side, you really do have these deductions that end up really helping high-end people, mortgage interest deductions for mansions, some business expenses. I do talk in my article about how, because I'm an author, I get to deduct all kinds of business lunches and my business home office.
17% of your utility bills, your home office, 17% of your home. Maybe, if that lunch happens to involve poker, you could deduct that.
Poker losses are deductible as well, but fortunately, I never lose.
So you do agree with those who say there's fat. I mean, most would say that there is. It's just who
Absolutely.
Gets to decide and who has the backbone to do something about it. And in the who gets to decide, you point out that part of your children's entertainment is government subsidized because you park them in front of PBS programming. You also say, I'm not sure why.
No offense, but I think I think public radio might get a little bit of subsidy in there too.
Well, and it does, although most stations would say only about 7% of their budget. So the question is, what gets cut? That, or maybe the public bus that takes your nanny home? Who gets to say what?
Exactly. And one of the reasons that I think this debate has gotten so skewed is, first of all, this notion that we really are proud of our making and blind to our taking. That when we hear there's 47% of the country that's just mooching, we say, oh, well, great. That must be somebody else. That's some other freeloader because obviously I'm a maker. And 90% of the country is thinking that. The other problem is that when you really go to where the money is, generally you have to start with health care, and people like their health care. They don't want their Medicare cut.
You actually say the tax advantages for healthcare are the country's costliest tax expenditures, again, deductions. And you talk about a shoulder. You had an aching shoulder. And you might not have gone in to check out what it was if your health benefits provided by your wonderful employer weren't tax exempt. And your orthopedist might not have done an MRI in addition to an X-ray if you didn't have this comprehensive insurance.
Right. I thought my shoulder story actually, it sort of showed the pros and the cons of kind of encouraging people to get extra health care through the tax code. When you don't have more skin in the game, there's more likelihood of out-of-control spending. But at the same time, by aggressively treating this and going to physical therapy, I saved myself surgery, which might have ultimately been even more expensive for me, for my insurance company, and for taxpayers. But certainly what's beyond question is the fact that the government intervention does distort this decision-making. That does make me a moocher. I'm the kind of moocher who votes.
That's Michael Grunwald, senior national correspondent for Time magazine. His new book, by the way, The New Deal, The Hidden Story of Change in the Obama Era, is about President Obama's stimulus plan, which Michael says worked well beyond what his critics say. And Michael, will have you back to talk about that. But thanks so much, you moocher.
Hey, you mooch too.
Don't we all? And there's more. NASCAR is subsidized. Mitt Romney's wife's horse is a tax exemption. It's a business venture. Michael says liberals are correct that we take from the government more than we know. Conservatives are correct that government tries to do too many things. So you say what? We want to hear from you. Go to hereandnow.org or facebook.com/hereandnowradio. Weigh in. Back with a look at a big debate last night. Here and Now.